So the questions are these. How can we really activate the best of the private sector to meet the challenges of the real world? Is there a way to accelerate my career that doesn't involve boring online or classroom courses? And can I really impact people in the developing world with the skills that I have? Can I finally feel proud of what I know? Those are the questions, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Philippa White, and this is TIE Unearthed. Keep listening, and you can follow us on our journey as we show you how we're connecting the private sector with the social sector to make change. Hello, everyone. Philippa White here, and welcome to episode 9 of TIE's podcast. Today, I'm speaking with my friend, Rob Campbell. Hi, Rob.
Hello.
Hi. Listen, let me introduce you to our listeners so that everyone knows just how brilliant you are. So despite coming from Nottingham, being a session guitarist for some of the worst of 80s, 90s pop stars, supporting a team that is a football embarrassment, and having a revolting obsession with Birkenstocks, which, by the way, I love Birkenstocks too, Rob has somehow managed to have a 30-year career in creativity, working as a strategist in countries that include China, America, Japan, Singapore, and Australia. He's developed strategy for everything from airport lounges people want to miss their plane to stay in, to mopeds that think they're a 4x4 on two wheels, right through to global Olympic campaigns that define sport in the hearts and minds of culture all around the world. He's worked with names like Nike, Virgin, Metallica, at agencies including Cynic, Wieden & Kennedy, and RGA, and has proudly been called an asshole by Lars Ulrich, Richard Branson, and Dan Wieden. Wow, that's quite a claim to fame.
Yeah.
So Rob is a well-known speaker, writer, mischief maker, and passionately believes in culture, creativity, and chaos. And he also has an unhealthy obsession with listing things in threes. And I have to say that last part made me laugh. So now we met in January, just before the world kind of imploded, yeah. Exploded, don't know, at James Welch's fantastic TNDP evenings in London. And you were the guest speaker. And after we talked about our shared interest in shaking things up and challenging the status quo, I knew that we'd be lifelong friends. So I love how you see the world. I love how your approach to life, your comments on things, just the way that you embrace life. And I just want you to tell me and our listeners, have you always been a rebel? Like, where does this come from?
I mean, rebel makes it sound like I'm doing it just because I want to do it. And sorry, let me turn my email off. I don't know why that's suddenly on. I've not ever looked at it that way, in all honesty. I was really lucky that I had parents who were really passionate about, saying what they felt was right and exploring that rather than just going with what's the most popular viewpoint. And so, and I've always had bosses that have kind of embraced that as well. So, but I mean, I know rebel is supposed to be cool, but my worry with the word rebel is it feels like you're just doing it for the sake of doing it. That's just not what it is. For me, it's just, I get very frustrated when people view the world just through their lens and think that means everyone feels the same way. And I've been really privileged to live around the world and find out how much of the things I thought were right were absolutely wrong. And I just would like to, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that maybe you're not quite as right as you were. And there's space in there for a bit more objectivity rather than activity. And I suppose when my father was a lawyer, my mum's family, my mum was Italian. They're all lawyers against the mafia. So I've always,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's been quite an eventful. And, and I suppose I learned, were absorbed a bit about being able to try and make people think more openly about stuff. Whether I'm good at it is another thing altogether. But yeah, it's always been there.
Can you give examples? Can you give an example of something that you are particularly proud of, just to bring to life a way that you have managed to get people to perhaps just see something in a different way, or perhaps you did go against the grain quite a bit and perhaps it did raise some eyebrows, but actually you felt genuinely quite proud of it and thought, yeah, you know what? My parents would be proud.
Well, I suppose the thing that is one of the things I'm the proudest of, and it was also one of the happiest times of my life, was living in China. I cannot tell you what a privilege that's been. I miss it. I miss it more than anywhere I've ever lived. And without doubt, there's a lot of really messed up stuff there, as there is in all around the world. But the Western world's myopic and prejudiced view of what actually that country is about and the values, I felt a real honor to represent China, the culture of that, and putting some sort of transparency and honesty and understanding into Western brands and people's minds.
Nice.
I can't tell you how much my life there meant to me. My son was born there. Mm. And for me, I'm probably more Chinese than Western in many of the values. And a lot of people go, but they don't understand what it is. They don't understand the history and the nuance. And they treat a lot of people really badly. And I'm not suggesting in any way that the government there is the most perfect, but then I don't think any government in the world is most perfect. And there's terrible mm-hmm. things that happen there as everywhere, as I said. But fundamentally, I prided myself on having an amazing team and knowing amazing people that allowed me to say to people, this is what you think is going on, but you need to understand what's actually going on and why. And maybe just then you'll start to understand that the view you had is more prejudice than proof. And that can maybe move somewhere forward. And yeah, that's probably the thing that I'm the proudest of.
And so what can you give an example of what perhaps, and yeah, what was something that you created when you were there that you think, well, yeah, you know what, that's exactly what I meant to do.
One of the things that I always was really proud of was when the Tiger Mom phrase was bandied about, which basically a lot of Westerners used as Chinese mothers who are almost, the way it was positioned to some was almost like this heartless, vicious, utterly focused on the child's unquestionable success. It was almost like the way it was presented in the West was very, very brutal, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I was doing some work for P&G for the Olympics at Wine & Kendi. And I remember writing this one thing, which was, to be honest, it was the start of the brief, but it went through everyone at my company and at P&G, just to put the context. And I exaggerated it slightly for effect, but it was, in the West, if you have a child that likes sport, then you might drop them off on a Saturday at 9 a.m. and pick them up 3 hours later. But in China, if the government believes that your child has athletic ability, you might drop them off at 9 a.m. on a Saturday and not be able to pick them up for 3 years later. And it was about, and it was about the ultimate sacrifice of love. And it was you're so quick to judge people, but the sacrifice that mothers make there is incredible.
Yeah, I love it.
And it started off a journey and we did some stuff. But yeah, it's, I take great, I have great love for that country.
Yeah. And tell me, why, can you give one example of why you were called an asshole by one of those three people?
Oh yeah, because I just didn't agree with them. I mean, it's like, not to be a rude prick and something like that, but it's just like, I remember Dan was in China and he was saying some stuff about China. I was just going, Dan, you're absolutely wrong. And he wasn't being when he said asshole, it certainly wasn't like.
I know, of course. Yeah.
I mean, maybe one of the others was, but it was just like, And also I think he asked me if I'd ever want to move to Portland. And I said, my response wasn't what he wanted, and he just goes, I should fire your ass. But it's always been about, from my perspective, hopefully, I'd like us all to kind of win better. It's a really weird story. So I moved to Australia chasing after a woman I met in England who I thought I couldn't live without. which she could live without me, and then I learned that I could live without her as well. But by the by, but in one of the few days where we got on, I remember we went to this boundaries course, and I was going, oh God, I don't want to go to a boundaries course. But it was really powerful, because I remember the first thing that they said was, how many times have you said yes to something you didn't want to do? And we often talk about that in terms of politeness. And I'm a big believer in also, you know, building credit and showing you care by caring about something somebody else cares about rather than just you. But quite often we do that for people that we don't really care about, and certainly don't really care about us. So for me, it was quite liberating to just go, oh, actually, no, I actually can say no. I've got a different point of view on this. Can we talk about it? And over the years, I mean, when I was younger, I was pretty bull in a china shop. And now I've learned how to phrase questions in ways that allow people to express how they feel without judgment, whereas in the past, I probably was terrible at that. But it's been amazing seeing, you know, my father do all that and all that stuff. It's been I'd hope they're proud of me. We'll see. Not they certainly won't be proud of everything, but hopefully overall.
I'm sure they're proud of you. They are definitely proud of you. You're doing some great stuff.
Yeah, you don't
know. But listen, COVID. COVID has certainly put a spanner in the works for many people and many companies, and Thai is no exception. This has by far been the worst thing to ever happen to us. But in the same breath, I can say it's also been, without question, the best thing to ever happen to us, this moment of COVID. And we often, with Thai, we often talk about necessity being the mother of invention, the obstacle being the way, and in every challenge there is an opportunity. As cliche as all of that is, there's just so much truth to that. And we really are a perfect example of that. And I just wanted to know, perhaps you can tell us your COVID story. I've followed your story a lot. I know a lot of people listening to this probably have as well. Can you bring this and your thoughts around all of this to life a little bit for us?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll caveat with saying that my situation is very privileged in the fact that I know there's lots of people and lots of my friends who've had a horrific time. And I'm very, very aware of that. From a purely personal perspective, 2020 has been one of the best years of my life. And within that, I got made redundant. And yet, I'm in a very fortunate position of my age, what we've been able to build up and save. You know, we lived in a house in London with admittedly a postage-sized backyard, but it's a damn sight bigger than most people had. And it's the first time I was ever able to spend this much time with my family. I've certainly never had breakfast and dinner with them as much as I have. It's the longest I've not been on a plane for 17 years. And I suppose when I got made redundant, on one side, it was like, well, it's happening to everyone. So I was like, okay. But the thing that was really important to me was to own it rather than to be ashamed of it. And it came about because an incredible gentleman I spoke to the day before, his reputation is extraordinary. And he'd gone through a redundancy, but he didn't feel he could tell people about it. And I felt for him. And I was like, well, I'm going to try and remove any element of stigma attached to it. So I owned it. I was, you know, the day I got made redundant, I was very clear. I thanked my company for what they did, because I appreciate that. What they did, they gave me an amazing chance to come back to England after 25 years. They gave me an amazing team. I got to do some stuff. But also the other side is, how on earth am I going to get another job if people don't know if I've lost my job? And then within that, I've always had quite an entrepreneurial spirit with side projects. And a number of the people I had done side projects for immediately said, well, we would like to more formally do this relationship. So our income was sorted very quickly. Hugely fortunate. And it allowed us to look at this time very differently. We'd bought a house. And we were excited. It didn't rob us of any of that enjoyment. Now, I absolutely appreciate, as I said, that is a very privileged position. And, you know, one of the things I've tried to do with the projects that I've been working on is bring people in who I know where legally I'm allowed to because of NDAs and stuff, because I want to kind of share that. But what I've also found interesting with 2020, my best friend, so I've known, he's 4 days younger than me, and I've known him since the day he was born. And
Paul.
Yeah, Paul. I love him. I love him so. He now, because my parents have died, he has known me longer than any other person on this planet. And he's a printer. He worked at a job he hated for 26 years. He'd worked at it. He hated it. And I hope his boss ever hears this thing, because his boss treated him like shit. And so I really hope he hears it. When we lived in America, we flew them out to join us, because in all the years I lived in China, Paul never came to see me. In America, he was there like a shark. It's like, you git. Anyway, he talked about wanting to do this like coffee cart business, and we kind of bullied him in with love into doing it. Anyway, he got laid onto furlough, and then when he got called back in, he goes, I don't want to do this anymore. And that was actually the trigger for him to go full-time with the coffee business. That's
great.
Frothy Coffee Man in Nottinghamshire and Derby. He's amazing. But it's like seeing that and seeing the pride he has in it, and just how happy he is. Honestly, just how happy he is. He's a better marketer than most people would ever, with that title, achieve. But he's happy. Yeah. And the problem with COVID is that I think it's obviously disrupted so many lives. There is a positive. There's a lot of people starting to question, what are they working for? Like, what are they working towards? And in a weird way, for me to spend so much time with my family and still do creative projects that with people I just would never have dreamt I could ever get to work with, that's kind of what I've been working for. And it's ironic it's come through the worst of times. But part of it has also been about not pivoting and all this bullshit business language that people keep churning out. But it's also been about, I know what I'm good at, and maybe I've found different ways to express that rather than changing who I am. But it's been one of the best years of my life. And I don't say that with any attempt to like big it up. It truly has.
Yeah, amazing. Now, I remember you also telling me a story once about the biggest thing that has happened to you in 5 years. And I wondered, can you tell us what happened and how it changed your perspective on things?
Well, I mean, there's lots of things that have happened to me. But one of the biggest things was when I was in America. And I got to work with three African-American women. Maya, Bree, and Chelsea, and they fundamentally changed my life. And at that point, I was, 47? And they fundamentally changed my life because because I'd lived in so many countries, I thought I kind of understood nuances of culture. And I do. I mean, it's not like I'm ignorant to it. But when you went to America, I realized, one, I was naive in a lot of things, but two, just how I was complicit in something I'm so vehemently against, which obviously is racism and prejudice. I got brought up in the most liberal house you could. I mean, when you have a barrister who specializes in basically human rights and ethics, another, you know, you're going to grow up with that. And then because of the generosity of those three women, they helped me realize that not being racist was nowhere near enough. And they continue to be just amazing people in my life. And I have felt, part of it is because I have a young, I'm really came to the party of being a parent so old, like, oh my God. But Jesus Christ, what was I thinking? But the other part is because I have a young son, I want him to look at me as someone who realizes you have to fight for change, not just go, I don't want people to keep doing things that are bad. And I feel I've got to make up for a huge amount of lost and wasted time. Again, just to be very clear, it's not that I was ever racist or prejudiced by a defined aspect, but by not standing up as strongly as I probably could have or definitely should have, I was complicit in some of the things that have been going on, and I'll be damned if I'm ever going to let that happen. And I owe a lot of people a lot of effort.
And how did they get you seeing things in a different way? What did they do that inspired you?
So when I start a new job, and I'm going to start a new job soon, so they're going to have a horrific time in this. I like just spending a lot of time getting to know the character of people. And what was really interesting with Maya, so I was like, she's been quite standoffish to me. And I found that really bizarre. Like, I'm her boss. I come from all over the world. I'm not American. I was like, and then suddenly I realized, oh, this is my ego that's causing this. It's not her, it's my ego. You know, it's like, I have to earn her trust and I'm expecting it. And then, quite frankly, it was just about being interested, because I was genuinely interested. And I wanted, my job is to help the people who work for me achieve more than they thought they could do. That is my job, is to give them a space to be vulnerable and creative and authentic. And if you're an African-American in America, or not even African-American, sorry, if you're a person of color anywhere in the world, you have to adapt to the majority culture to stand a chance of anything. You have to work harder to be paid lower. And I find that absolutely horrific. And I'm far more aware of those situations, and I will do all I can to counter that. Because it was never my intent, but I must have been complicit somewhere along the line.
And do they know that you had they had such an impact on you?
I mean, I did some work at the Brixton Finishing School, which is a creative school here in London. And I mean, the most impressive thing about me talking about them right now is that I haven't cried, because normally I cry when I talk about them. And it's cried because I'm just so, like, they make me, I'm so grateful for everything they've done for me. And it's just like, because I think the world, they fundamentally changed my life. Absolutely.
Yeah, cool.
That impact is total and sustained.
Amazing. Now, today, we are launching our first project with the Thai Accelerator Program, and your friend Jason Oak is taking part, which is super exciting. And for those of you who are listening that don't know, our Thai Accelerator Program allows people to raise their game by using their skills to impact the world, and they change their perspective by seeing the world in a completely different light, seeing the power of what they know. And the results have been pretty extraordinary. The Thai Accelerator Program specifically is a virtual six-week program. It takes 2 hours a day. You can do it from home. It's CPD accredited. And this particular project will be working to support an organization in Syria and Iraq that provides hope and a future for people who are impacted by torture, war, and terror. So it's an amazing organization. Now, I know that you're a fan of Thai and the program, and I just wonder, do you have anything that you maybe want to share with our listeners about it, particularly for people wondering if they should get involved? Just keen to know your thoughts.
Well, I mean, I think that the people I've met in my life who have been the most interesting, intriguing, and quite often most successful have been the ones who've embraced learning on a constant basis. And when you get to a certain age, you can feel a bit intimidated by that, because you can go, well, I don't know things as much, or so you stick with what you know. And my mum used to always say, care about what others care about, and you'll basically get paid in knowledge and awareness. And I think what Thai for me does is you're able to use your talent in ways you didn't imagine, which is just unbelievably rewarding. But, and this is the bit that people only find out at the end, the experience that they've had actually teaches them a whole lot of other things about how their talent can be evolved, developed, or grown. Because it opens doors to things you might not have seen before. And I think when we first met and you told me about it, I was like, oh. And then we have all these mutual friends, which is also bizarre, that like, as we're chatting, we're going, fucking hell, we know everybody the same. How have I not met you?
Yeah, exactly. How is this not
I just think before? It's a phenomenal aspect, because a lot of people look into it thinking, what can I do to help? And they do it for all the right reasons. But what I don't know if they really realize till the end is just how much they grow because of it. In areas
they can grow totally.
Yeah, in areas that will actually have huge professional value in it. Like for me, not in the same way, but when I went to China, I mean, China was the first country I'd ever lived in where literally I was a true, very privileged, but true minority. I did a presentation in Australia, which was basically called, you don't have to be a sadomasochist to live in China, but it helps. But it was all about how I'd grown as a human and all the things that I'd learned and the values that I now bring into my job with the people I work in and the way I work with clients is directly because I put myself in that situation. I went in thinking, oh, I know this stuff. I came out going, I've had to relearn my normal, to such an extent that it's had an incredible impact. And the fact that Thai allows you to do that without necessarily having to do such a huge move, well, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Actually, it's just interesting listening to you talk, because I finished my business degree in Thailand.
Right.
And I lived in Bangkok for 6 months. And I'd traveled a lot. I mean, having been born in South Africa, you know, I'd been to around Africa, a couple of countries around Africa. Of course, I lived in Canada, but I went to Europe, visiting family in the UK, but also traveled around Europe. So I'd been lucky enough to have exposure to different places, but I'd never been to Asia before. And Asia, oh my God. The only way I explained it was that it turned everything that I assumed as being sort of the way that things are done and just turned it on its head. And it was just extraordinary, because it's so funny how it's so easy for us to just assume that the way that we do things or the way that things are done are just the way that things are done.
Yeah.
And the way, and when I got, actually it was funny, because when I got to Bangkok, it was in 2001, but it was like, it was sort of January 2001. So we had just gone through the year 2000 kind of, Nostradamus has said that the whole world is going to, you know, end in the year 2000. You know, obviously there was the computer thing, but it was more than that. I mean, it was sort of this, oh my God, what is going to happen in the year 2000? And I remember arriving in Bangkok and still being a little bit kind of, I don't know, overwhelmed, I guess, by this sort of crazy thing that, okay, the year 2000 is now finished. It's the year 2000. Gosh, okay, we've all survived. And I remember getting there and talking to people at my university and saying, yeah, so I mean, it was kind of crazy, isn't it? This whole sort of year 2000 thing. And they said, it's not the year 2000 here. And I was like, what are you talking about? They're like, yeah, no, we use a completely different calendar. It's like, it's not the year 2000.
Yeah.
And I thought, what? Yeah. What? This is insane. And it's, I mean, then you sort of stop and think, of course, you know, the Buddhist calendar, the Jewish calendar, the, you know, how is it that we in the West honestly believe that the world revolves around our calendar?
Yeah.
Like, it just suddenly threw all of that out for me. And I thought, oh my God, I am such an, like, it's so arrogant for us to assume that everything just, you know.
It's also, I used to tell people that China only has one time zone. And people go, really? I go, yeah. And they would find that so confusing. I go, well, it's a communist country. Of course it does. You know, and people go, oh, right. And then there's weird laws. I was doing this campaign, this was for Gap, I think. We're in the US, but for China. And they rang me to see if these ads they had would work. I can't remember all the details, it's such a long time ago. But it was about a time machine or something. And I said, oh, you know, legally here, you're not allowed to go back in time. You're not allowed to do stuff that shows back in time. I might have got that wrong, but I think they go, what? I said, no, you can only go one way that's a legal aspect. Because, and you can agree and go, yes. And it's just like there's some weird laws in China. There is this weird law that you can have more
that's
than
so
two
funny.
Flies in a public toilet. And I love the idea that there is like, that is against law if there were three flies there. But there's, but then I would say to people, it's a 5,000 year old culture. Like, it's like, what do you mean? It's like, and people forget all this stuff, and they forget how there are threads that bring cultures through. And the thing I loved so much about being there is having to relearn what a value system was, understand what filial responsibility was, and have all the prejudices that have been culturally influencing my mind slowly, one by one, destroyed. So, for example, when people talk about China as polluting the world, you go, well, on one side, you go, yes, it's still, you know, far less than America has been, given the length of time America was number one. But also, China is the biggest investor in green tech because they don't want a polluted world. It's not like they want to, they're absolutely trying to do it. And it's, people just like to do what's the top headline. But when you go to these other countries, you go, fucking Japan. I've got to tell you that. So in Japan, my wife and I were just walking around and we found this guy who was a comb master. And there were like these eight.
A what master?
Comb master. And
oh, a comb
like
master.
Hand carving out of wood, sanding down combs. And then when they finished, they'd go and hand it to this guy who'd run it down his face and either put it in this basket for finished or would just shake his head and give it back to them. And I'm like going, that's amazing. You know, and it's...
That is amazing.
It's such... There's such richness. And that's... But you only do it if you're exposed to it. Reading about it, it's not the same.
Exactly.
You have to be in it.
No. Totally. I obviously couldn't agree more. Now, listen, you are such a busy guy. And every time I talk to you, you're up to something different or have another extraordinary story to tell. Tell me, what are you working on at the moment, or what exciting plans do you have in the pipeline that you want to share with our listeners? You mentioned about starting a new job. What's your next adventure?
At the moment, I'm just doing a range of weird, wonderful stuff, quite frankly. And then we were really quite happy about doing that. Like, as I said, we just literally just bought this house. And then one of my favorite companies on the planet, a company called Colenso, who I almost gone to join about 5 years ago, rang me. And what's ironic about that is 5 years ago, I almost joined them. But I said to my wife, it's just 5 years too soon, just 5 years too soon. And then almost to the day, they rang me.
Wow.
And my wife's Australian. And, you know, so there was this thing where I go, well, I love them. My wife could be closer to her mum for a while. And our son could grow up in a place that I think is one of the most beautiful, culturally embracing places on earth, which is in New Zealand. So February or March, we're going to go over there, keep the adventure going.
Amazing.
Yeah. We're super excited about it. Our cat's a Singapore street cat. This will be her sixth country in 13 years. So she is not happy at all. but yeah, I've never really had a career plan. I've kind of just gone where I've been intrigued, which is why I've ended up in all these different places. And this is another one. I love them. I love how they do things and the work I'm looking to learn and hopefully, you know, make them be even better once I've spent time there. But yeah, we're super excited about it.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. And it's just embracing new things and, you know, pushing yourself and looking for opportunities. And honestly, I believe in that. And I know that this moment has been really difficult for a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people, but there's always a silver lining. And I do think that the importance with any difficult time, you got to find it. You've got to look for it because it's there. And you know, follow that to be able to find, you know, interesting opportunities. And I do, you know, doors close, but other doors open. And how exciting.
What I was going to say is that this has happened to me twice now. The first time I was living in Australia, I had 20 working days to get a job where I'd be kicked out. It was horrific. I was looking after my parents because my dad had had a stroke at that point. Mum wasn't working. So I was, and what that led to was 16 years of the most creatively and culturally thrilling time of my life. So when I got made redundant again, naively, I went, well, maybe lightning strikes twice. You know, it's like, forget the fact that I'm old, you know. And my attitude, and it's easier for us because we've done this a lot. But my attitude's always been, if you're open to everything, anything can happen, basically.
Totally agree. That's such a great...
But I appreciate that's amazing. Hard for a lot of people. But it might not be... Like, there's also... a friend of mine's got a company called Gap Jumpers, which is like this weird recruitment company that wants to help people with really good skills in one industry get jobs in others. Like, there are people out there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for us, it's been... I'm very fortunate that I'm wildly immature and very stubborn at the same time. And so it's like, for me, it was like, when it happened and I got all these things, I love all the projects I do. I love working with kind of weird people. And yeah, Colenso are beautifully ridiculous. And so I'm looking forward to that being my home.
Amazing. Robert, I'm so excited for you. I look forward to following your stories and your blog. Makes me laugh. I love, you know, you. So yeah, I'm looking, although it's sad that I probably won't see you for the amount of time that you're in New Zealand, because I don't think I'll be going to New Zealand anytime soon. But it's, I will of course follow you closely through our social network.
I mean, what you're doing is amazing.
Good.
I think everyone that does it, well, the fact that everyone that does it feels it changed where their road in life went is the greatest testimony to what you and Ty do. So, and the more we do that, the more different roads we can go down. And at the end of the day, for me anyway, I like the idea of being old and going, oh yeah, you cheeky bugger, you did that. And that comes from the experiences you have. So the more you embrace things that you might not be comfortable with, the more comfortable you'll be with what the possibilities could be.
Totally. And embrace, actually, again, I tend to be quoting Sir John Haggerty the entire time I've been doing this podcast, but he does have some great nuggets of just ways to live your life. And he talks about the power of expanding your personal circle. And just this conversation with you today, basically, just how, you know, as I'm thinking through everything we've talked about, basically it's that. It's just talking about the power of how, you know, amazing it is when you expand your personal circle and what comes out of that.
Yeah. That's totally it. I mean, without doubt, the fact, because I've been fortunate to live and work all around the world, the people I know I'm a bloke from Nottingham that didn't go to university because I was pretty rubbish at school. Yeah, I'm going to graft, but I love meeting people who are really interesting. You know, one of the people I worked with in China, you know, he's an eccentric billionaire, but an amazing entrepreneur. And I helped him on this thing he's built where it's like this luxury fashion mall, but it's all been designed to look like Mars, because his attitude was, he goes, why would you do something that's just a bit better than everything else? SKPS. It's incredible. Like, it's got robot sheep because that's what farming will be. It's incredible. And for me, and I still work with him, to go from that to these musicians who are classic musicians in all the best and worst ways, like, that all came about because I just was lucky. That expand your personal circle. That's how you did it. Yeah. Best, isn't it?
Exactly. Rob, listen, it's so nice to connect with you. Thank you for taking your time to talk to me. I love our conversations. Thank you for joining this podcast. And have a good rest of your Monday.
Thank you so much. And I hope I do see you, whether in New Zealand or in Brazil.
Amazing. Yeah, to Brazil.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Perfect. Once all of this footage comes out, you've got a place to stay.
Legend. Thank you so much. Take care.
Take care. Thanks, Rob. Take care. Bye. Hey everyone, this is Philippa again. So this is your chance to get involved with Ty.
We have three absolutely amazing virtual opportunities available, all rooted in connecting the private sector with the social sector to make change. TIE has never been more necessary than right now. So if you're looking for life-changing leadership development opportunities for your employees and you want your company to impact the world, we've got you covered. If you're looking to step out of your comfort zone and use your skills to make a difference and keen to meet other like-minded professionals with similar values, then our TIE Accelerator program is for you. There are so many options, so I urge you to get in touch. Go to theinternationalexchange.co.uk for more information or just shoot us an email. Better companies, better leaders, better world.